Hello, podcast listeners. We know podcasts are a great way to catch up on a program that you may have missed on KSJE, and it's provided as a free service of this radio station. But you know, KSJE is now listener-supported, and so while you enjoy this podcast, we hope that you'll also take some time to join KSJE. Become a member today. It's quite easy to do. Just go to our website at ksje.com/support and pick the level of support that best matches your budget. Thanks again for listening. Here's your podcast.
Welcome back to Right on Four Corners. I'm your host, Delshree Gladden, and we're diving back into part two of our interview with author Karen Kogan and editor Marina Ferrari.
Well, I am Karen Kogan, and I am a longtime author. I started out my career with, it was a small New York press, traditionally published. And so you trust when you have a traditional press that they're going to go through, they have editors, and you assume that they've gone through and really gotten everything. And she's right. You know, she looked back through and she's like, boy, they missed some things.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yes, I've unfortunately experienced that with some of my previous publishers as well. Mm-hmm. And it's like, got my rights back and, you know, went back through it. And it was like,
so you know.
Oh, right. Dear. Yes. Yeah, I've got to go back through
yes.
this whole thing. You know, it's interesting because I've been noticing the trend in publishing right now is that, you know, you used to go through developmental editing first.
Right.
You know, we're working out the characters, we're working out the story, we're fixing big problems, we're really working through it as a partnership. And it doesn't seem like that's happening as much more. It seems like what a lot of authors are getting when they sign contracts is they're getting proofreading. Where I feel like with some of the books I grew up with, I didn't see as many of those issues.
That's a good point.
It is.
A little bit more developed where I feel like, and I know the cost, a lot of small publishing houses don't have the budget to pay for, you know, 6 or 7 rounds of editing.
True.
But that shift is kind of concerning. A lot of stories that I feel like are really good bones to it, but they're not completely developed to the level that I feel like they should be.
Yes.
And it's been interesting because even as I've gone back and reread some of my books, or my boyfriend has been reading some of mine, that he's kind of coming back like, about this? I'm like, yeah, that's a really good point.
Good point. I could fix that. I think that's where we're closing the gap between the traditional and the indie, too, is that we used to rely totally on the traditional publishers to do those things, to, you know, to edit, to say, do developmental editing. And now I think that indie writers are becoming more aware of that how much you really have to do to develop your book and for the characters to be well developed. Mm-hmm. So I think that's really closing the gap a bit and raising the bar. I've noticed it with independent writing.
Yeah, I think it was maybe Written Word. I'd have to go back and look. My memory is terrible for things like this. They put out their publishing industry trends for 2023. And I was going through and reading that. And it was really interesting because their number one trend that they put at the top of the list was that in indie publishing, small press and self-published, that the biggest trend that they're seeing is a focus on quality.
Mm-hmm.
And largely with the editing, because that's been something that indie and self-pub have been attacked for the most. And they surveyed their group of authors on how do you edit, how much does it cost, which the average editing cost was lower than I expected it to be, which it probably has its good and bad sides.
But, depends on who you have editing, obviously.
Yeah.
It's like anything, quality. You get what you pay for, I think, a lot of times.
I thought that was interesting because it's typically been for a full-length novel, like the 60,000-70,000 word range, I've seen a lot of 1,000-1,200-ish per project.
Really?
And it's kind of held steady, but they were actually showing that most authors were paying in the range of $500 to $700 for editing a full novel, which shocked me because that's a pretty drastic change.
It really is.
But it did show over their trends for the years. They do this survey every year, probably for the last decade or so, that the percentage of people paying for professional editing was changing significantly in that direction of being
up
willing to
down.
Pay for it to pay for it more often. Yeah, to actually be working with professional editors.
I think because that's been such a critical thing. You know, that's one thing that indie authors have heard and been criticized for is that the books aren't the quality. So I think there's a lot more developmental as well as, well, there's a good 3 levels of editing. And I think more people are going for all of those levels now and really trying to make sure the quality is higher.
Yeah.
Which is good.
You know? I think so. I mean, it's a great learning experience for the author as well to go through that process of working with an editor. I think it really teaches you a lot about your own writing when you get that list back or that Word doc with, you know, 2,500 edits made to it.
Just start over.
Something like that where you're like, oh, geez.
I think you really have to be willing to let your ego go.
That's an important part of writing in general.
It is.
I think being able to open up to the fact that once it leaves your hands, it's really not just your book anymore.
Yes. And I think it takes time. I think that's much harder at first. Like you said earlier, when you're first doing your first work, it's more crushing if somebody comes in and says, oh my goodness, this whole paragraph has to go. Once you've done it a while, it really doesn't bother you.
Yeah.
It's like, yeah, it probably does. I think I can fix that.
Yeah, it does get easier.
It
so
does.
New writers out there who maybe have had a traumatizing experience with getting feedback.
Keep going.
Don't give up. It gets easier. And you do really, especially once you find like a trusted person or a critique group or something that is going to give you real feedback in a constructive way and not just tear it apart for fun or because that's
exactly
who they are, then it's a really valuable process, I think. I've always learned through that experience and found out more things about my own writing and things I need to keep an eye on and be like, okay, well, if I quit making these mistakes, this process will go better next
time. It does.
Time.
You learn your weaknesses, and we do. We have certain things that I think we tend to do more often, maybe than somebody else does that particular thing, but we have certain weaknesses in our work. I know I do. And after a while, if you're aware of that, you can start catching it, even yourself sometimes, and going, no, I didn't really want to do that. I didn't want to say that. I punctuated that wrong, whatever it is.
Well, and I wanted to switch gears just a little bit because I don't want to not talk about your children's book that you write. Tell us a little bit about just that process of writing children's books. That just seems completely foreign to me. It's not something I've ever really attempted or think I would be any good at. It
you
seems like a very
know.
Unique process compared to novel writing.
Oh, it is very, very different. But I taught kindergarten for a number of years, like over 20 years. And during that time, I read hundreds of children's books to children. And I even started writing when my children were little. I'd read so many books, but children's books to me are a whole level of creativity. It's a whole different level of thinking. The story has to be about something that a child would really be drawn to, whether it be little bear characters, I have a series of those, to be a childish problem, something that they would be curious about how that got solved. And I just think there's such a challenge in that, and it's just so much fun. And the word, you have to know what grade level, what reading level you're writing at, because obviously too hard a word. It does get complicated because there's middle grade, there's picture books, there's, and all of these have pretty strict regulations on what kind of words you're going to use, what kind of sentences, how long is the book, how is it formatted. Once you get past all that, the stories are just so much fun because you can get out there and just get so creative. Like, I love my little bears, and he just does all kinds of things that are hopefully a child would find really funny or really engaging. And I try to write for the kids, and the kind of books that I've noticed when I was teaching made them laugh or really caught their attention. And they do like certain kinds of characters. You have to be aware of that.
Well, I can definitely see being around young children on a day-to-day basis being a benefit for choosing the right characters and stories.
And what settings do they love? What kind of things make them laugh? What kind of characters do they like? What do they just kind of sit there and go, yeah, this is boring? But you kind of pick up on that after reading hundreds of books to children.
Well, that's what I was going to ask. I mean, short of, for someone who maybe does not teach or have small children or is not around whatever age group that they want to write children's literature for, what do you recommend as the best way to familiarize yourself enough with writing for children that you could do it effectively?
read. You really would have to go in and read and pick some like award winners in whatever age level you're writing for. Pick them, read them. You have to read those books and then you have to take them apart. Why did this win a Caldecott Award? You know, what about this book is different? And then when you start writing your book, you're going to think to yourself, what kind of characters were in those books? What were their personalities like? What was the subject matter? You know, what would make a child like this book? How is that book different than like what I would have written? And you also really have to know what, in doing that, you find out what children nowadays, right now, like to read. Because I know I had a dear friend. And she was an older woman, but she decided to write for kids. And she did more or less a Dick and Jane form kind of book style. And it really, it was cute. It was adorable. But it didn't fit the market. So markets change. And I think by reading what's currently best-selling for children, you find out what are they reading right now. If you go in and look at Scholastic book clubs, what kind of books are on there? What's the subject matter? So I think that's the best way to do it, is just really research.
For children's literature especially, because I think being familiar with, like you said, the grade level of the vocabulary, the interest, especially important for that. But I think no matter what you're writing, if you're not reading that genre and becoming familiar with the expectations of the reader, the tropes, the structure, the different elements that are common to that genre, not that you have to copy it and write a cookie cutter book.
Right.
But if you're not familiar with that genre, it's really hard to connect with those readers who are dedicated readers of that genre, which lot of people are. There's a lot of people like me and probably you guys who read a little bit of everything all over the place. But I think in today's market, you do have a lot of people who only read contemporary romance, small town.
Right.
With this type of heroine. Or they only read cozy mysteries that are culinary based, or only read horror and or hard-boiled detective mysteries.
Exactly.
And if you aren't writing what they're expecting, when you're not going to get very good reviews once it's out.
Right.
But you're going to push that reader away and say, oh, well, I thought this was what I wanted, but it's not.
Well, and if you label it, say, for example, a small-town Christian romance, you're absolutely right. There are certain elements that they are going to expect. And if you throw something in there that just really does not meet what they're wanting to read, what all the other books are like, they're not going to like your book.
Right.
Because they chose it because they like that genre and that's what they want to read.
Yeah. That's something that not only I've kind of encountered, but I've seen commented on by agents or different publishers giving interviews, things like that, where they'll talk to writers and authors and ask them, well, what are you reading? Mm-hmm. And the answer all too often is, well, I don't have time to read.
Oops.
I'm writing.
So true.
Like, you either have time to write or you have time to read, but it really doesn't work that well.
It doesn't. You need to do both. Read in your genre. Everybody will tell you that if you look for expert advice, you know, read what you're writing. See what the top books are, say, in Amazon. What are the top rated books in that genre?
You know,
make sure you know what they're writing about. What style are they writing in? That's just smart advice.
Yeah. It kind of comes to an interesting approach, I guess might be the right word for it, of how you prepare. Because I write in multiple genres, you write in multiple genres. So I'm curious to see what your process is. A lot of authors will either kind of immerse themselves in whatever genre they're doing to like get into that world, into that headspace, or some writers will kind of like blank slate themselves by either staying away from media for so long or reading or watching or consuming something totally different than what they plan to write, because they don't want to be influenced and be like, oh, well, I'm copying what I've read, you know, 27 small town Christian romances and now my book sounds exactly like everybody else's.
Well, that's what they want, though, actually, to be honest with you. They're looking for certain, I mean, certainly not copying somebody's story or their writing style. You wouldn't do that because we all have our own writing style. But the basic kinds of plots, maybe the spiritual aspects being certain levels. I mean, this is what people want to read. That's what I want to read when I pick out a certain genre of book. I have certain expectations. And if it goes way off the rails, I'm not going to like the book.
So do you read in the genre that you're writing as you're writing or as you're preparing to write a particular book?
Yes, I do. And that is varied over time, depending on what I was writing. When I had my phase of writing just a few suspense, clean suspense novels, romantic suspense, I was reading in that because it got my brain going that direction, thinking, you know, how would this be? How did they add the suspense, the mystery, the, you know, it had to be exciting. What was the pacing like? It's a lot faster paced. And I did get inspiration from reading, and I had a lot of fun reading in those genres. But I don't read in those right now when I'm writing romance, because it's just a totally different mindset, and I get a lot more inspiration. And it's kind of where I write where my interest is at the time. Mm-hmm. My interest right now is in the romance, and so that's what I'm going to read. Mm-hmm. That's what I'm enjoying right now. It inspires you when you do read in that and what you want to write, I think.
I would agree. I usually tend to get myself back into that mode. Mm-hmm. I'll read a book or two in that genre to kind of settle myself back into the worlds, the expectations, the types of characters, just to... Because I do tend to kind of venture outside of strict conventions with a lot of genres. Try to rein myself in a little bit so I'm not too far out in the weeds of whatever genre it is.
You have a good imagination.
Yeah, I'm not good at always staying in the lane that I should stay in, but I don't know. Keeps it interesting for me.
It does. And sometimes that's part of your editing when you go back and you say, no, that's really not in the genre that I'm writing here. That went outside the lines. And then you just fix it. You fix the scene or whatever.
Yeah, that's the benefit of being able to go back and rework things.
Exactly.
Rena, I did want to come over to you and ask, for someone who maybe has spent some time reading in their genre and then starts writing and realizes that maybe they're a little too similar to other books in the genre. Maybe it's starting to feel a little cookie cutter or formulaic. What would you say are some of those things to kind of keep an eye out for when writing to make sure that you're adding enough variety or depth or, you know, whatever it is to keep it from being same story, different character names?
That's a good question. And I have to confess, I don't have that much experience with other writers. The other genres, I guess, that I've read tend to be much more nonfiction, scientific. Karen is really the first one with the historical romance, and she's the only one that I have edited since, oh gosh, for the last couple of years. And I would tell her if her stories sounded the same, and she's really good at making sure that that doesn't happen. I tease her because if one character has dark wavy hair and blue eyes and then another one, then I razz her about it. But it fits in. She changes enough other things that it doesn't sound the same at all.
You just can't change the hair or eye color within your book. That does not work. That's the kind of thing she catches.
And I was laughing with the one you read because the art, I mean, that's her husband, John Cogan, the artist, who is superb. And I'm getting insight. I'm wondering, did you feel like that when you were starting off? Were you insecure with an artist?
No, I'm a crazy fly-by-the-seat-of-your-pants person.
There you go.
I figured it would all work out.
And it did.
And it did.
Yeah.
Well, that brings up an interesting thing that a lot of readers will often ask writers. How much of this is from your real life? Which I'm sure you probably get that question a lot.
Yes, you do.
How do you approach bringing in some of the real-life elements, maybe characteristics from people you know or certain things you've experienced or witnessed in friends or family, because you can't help but bring some of that into your writing.
Right.
But you want to do it in a respectful way, you know, especially if it's something sensitive or that the other person might realize is them. Mm-hmm. How do you approach that blend of fiction and your real life influences?
I think that is perfectly okay, because we couldn't write a word unless we observed people. I mean, that's where we get our ideas. That's where we get our sense of personality of other people, I think that's perfectly okay. I would never write a story where I just thought of a certain person and wrote literally them. I mean, the people are always blended between lots of different personality traits. They're never somebody that I know and I just, you know, I wrote that person. They're going to have different backgrounds, and just the background itself is going to make them have different reactions. You know, if I sat down and wrote about somebody I knew that grew up in a certain place and I wrote it there and I wrote exactly what happened in their life, I'd be writing their biography, right? I mean, and so I don't do that, but I can base it on somebody's personality characteristics or maybe a situation that I know somebody had in their life, but it's never all, this person is blended. It's never just that person.
Mm-hmm. But that's a good point that you bring up, because mm-hmm. you hear of those lawsuits where somebody writes a book and let's say it was a very traumatic time in their life and it's interesting and people want to read about it. But then some of the characters, the real life people, come forward and say, this is me that you wrote mm-hmm. about and not allowed. So that would be hard.
Yeah, it's tricky.
Very tricky.
Tricky genre to write in when yeah. you're doing memoir. And mm-hmm, I've had a few clients here or there who've asked me about that. And I've had to tell them, like, I am not an expert in this. Mm-hmm. You're going to have to either talk to another memoirist or consult your lawyer.
Yes.
Or, you know, right. get some advice from someone who is more familiar with that. Because I think right. that is a really challenging
right.
aspect. And sometimes maybe the approach is to fictionalize it. If there's too many things that are going to be too difficult to talk to or talk about mm-hmm. People who are still living, that's a difficult one. I definitely don't have the answers on how to do that.
They better not recognize themselves is what I can say. You know, you don't want
the disclaimer on the first page like movies do when they're like, while based on real characters, it's all blended and not fictional. I mean, not yes. true. And mm-hmm. so they like give themselves an out.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I definitely like more the approach of
yes.
a few things here and there that right. all kind of blend together into something different and unique. I think that's
it's very conscientious, it's a good rule of thumb. Isn't it? You have to really be aware.
You do. Yeah. And if you make up your character, I think you're pretty safe. And even if they've got some characteristics of various people that you might have known, it's still not going to be that person. It's going to mm-hmm. be a person that you have put together.
Yeah. Yeah. I think the limited real life mm-hmm. people or traits largely added to fictional characters yes. is probably a good approach overall.
Right.
I think so. Right. Make them up.
Well, and we are starting to get close to the end of time. But so I did want to come back to the main book that I was able to read. And kind of the last thing I wanted to touch on with that, people who are interested in writing any sort of faith-based fiction. It's a popular genre. A lot of people really enjoy that and read pretty frequently. I think someone who's interested in writing that, my question would be, if that was a genre I was interested in, how do you approach blending the faith elements with the rest of the story? Because I think that seems like that could be a really difficult thing for it not to be overly right. religious, where yes. maybe the story gets lost, or you know, it's kind of like a side thing that maybe like, mm-hmm. well, is it religious enough
that important?
To be
right.
in there?
Right.
Yeah. How do you approach finding
that balance?
I think
that you blend it in the story with their life experience and their needs. When a reader sees that the spiritual aspect comes in and really affects a need in this person's life, and it really helps them overcome their problems that they're having, and, you know, it comes out the other side from where they were here and they were so unhappy and they didn't know the answer, to come along and then realize, and it needs to be subtle, not in your face right. where it's just, you know, way pushed at somebody, but just that kind of bringing them along gradually to realize their need and to have them want what they're seeing. And it has to be their idea, you know, like it would be in real life. Mm-hmm. You know, you wouldn't come and just push it on somebody. It would need to be a mentoring kind of thing or a gradual thing and you know, done gently, I think.
Or the person needing it sees the other person with qualities that they wonder mm-hmm. how they can get.
Right.
You know?
Yes.
It's like, I want that peace. Mm-hmm. I want whatever it is that yes. you have.
Right. And so they gradually overcome their resistance right. to come to the other side and think, oh, yes, this does make me happy.
Yes.
And that's the whole point, really, of it, is seeing that kind of life and that kind of peace is what that person wanted all along.
And her books will have details like a character going to church or going to Bible study, kind of like the outside little details that bring it all together. So the setting shows the reader, you know, it might be subtle enough that maybe they're not picking up on it right away, but it presents a whole cohesive picture by the end of it. Does that make any sense?
Yeah, I like that. And I think focusing on those needs of the characters, not mm-hmm. like necessarily like I have a message to get across right. to my readers.
Yeah.
Right.
But sometimes that can come across, yes. I think, a little
it
heavy-handed
can.
At
yeah.
times.
And I think it has to go with the reader's needs and personality, and it has to be done within a relationship of somebody that really cares about them and wants what's mm-hmm. best for them, and that they finally start really seeing how they're feeling that peace and mm-hmm. that it's not forced, mm-hmm. you know, like you said, you don't want to be preaching.
Right.
Okay. Well, I just wanted to remind the readers as we get toward our end of time, that the book I was able to read was Made for Each Other by Karen Kogan. And we're also talking with Marina Ferrari and her experience with editing. And just before we wrap up completely, I did want to ask you about your upcoming book and whatever details you're able to share at this point, just to kind of give people a heads up of what to keep an eye out for.
Ooh, I'd love to. The one that's upcoming is the historical romance, because sometimes I go a little back and forth. The next one I'm going to write will be part of the contemporary romance series. But this is a historical romance, and it's called Beneath the Northern Lights, set in Alaska, and it's in the 1898 period of the Gold Rush. And so it's been a real hoot to write. It's been fun. And it's about a young woman who gets talked into going to Alaska. They're in the shipping business in San Francisco, and they're wealthy. And she is with her widowed dad, and he really wants this adventure. And so they go to Alaska in the 1898 period. And it's all about her adventure there and all the changes that it brings about in her. And, of course, it's a romance. So yeah,
it's part of the gold mine rush mm-hmm. and that's all tied into that. So everybody was flooding to go seek gold.
It had to be quite the time to live through. I imagine
right?
seeing all
yes.
of those changes, and
it was rough.
What an adventure for a young woman at that time.
It was, but it's something she needed, actually. And it yes. has, of course, a happy ending, and it comes out on Valentine's Day on Amazon.
Oh, nice.
Yeah.
Okay. And what is the publishing route with this book?
This one will be wide, so it'll be available on KDP on Amazon for paperback and the ebook. But it will be available to buy then on February 14th. It will be also available at the Apple and all the others. So anybody could look for it there.
All right. Good. And where can people find you online and stay in contact and up to date on what you're doing?
I do have KarenKogan.com. I have to admit that it's not where I want it right now. I do have an Amazon presence, so they can look me up there. If they have any true questions, they can get me by email, KarenKogan@msn.com. I love to hear from readers.
And Marina, did you want to share any information on yourself of people staying in contact with you?
I'm strictly word of mouth at this all point, right. But if anybody was truly interested, they could contact Karen, and Karen will pass it along to me.
Awesome. Yeah. Right. Well, I want to thank you both for taking a time out of your day. We're recording this on Martin Luther King Jr. Day, and they were so nice to come in on a holiday and visit with me and
take that time
to talk about
oh,
books
so
and writing
welcome.
And everything.
This was fun.
Awesome. Thank you guys so much.
You're welcome.
Did you enjoy that podcast? We hope that you did. And if you did, share it with your friends. And if you really want to keep podcasts like this coming, please support KSJE. You can do it easily online at ksje.com.